The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
I'm joined by Adrian Barry. We look at various quirky aspects of the sporting world, and today we're going to talk about mascots. Adrian, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, where did the mascot idea come from, and when did it originate?
Yeah, I to be honest, for me, it came from thinking about this item. You might have seen at the back end of last week. In fact, we might have discussed it last Friday morning, where Roy Keane had a bit of a pop at Arsenal, if you remember that, saying they were a bit like dinosaurs. And of course, as we all know, one of the most popular mascots, certainly in the Premier League and possibly beyond, is Gunnersaurus, the brilliantly named Arsenal dinosaur. So he was on all the back pages last week after Roy Keane, and it set me down a bit of a rabbit hole, Pat. I'm not going to lie, pardon the pun. And yeah, in terms of the item, so I started looking at it. 1890s was the first time that we start to see evidence of mascots in and around sport. It's Harvard v. Yale. It's a live bear that they have on the sidelines, and he's wonderfully called Teddy's Bear.
Okay, in America, the obvious things like the Denver Broncos. What's their mascot? Of course, it's got to be a horse.
Yes. And there still actually remains to this day an awful lot of live animals in and around sport on foot of Teddy's Bear. It did go out of vogue for a period of time. And interestingly, in Teddy's Bear as well, this is an interesting tangent that I took off this last night. It's not a huge jump from that to the origins of our great friend, the old Teddy Bear, which was named after Teddy Roosevelt, the U.S. president at that time. He was on a hunting trip. He refused to shoot a bear. A sweet shop owner in Brooklyn was inspired by all of this and made a stuffed toy bear out of it and called it Teddy's Bear. And lo and behold, 100-odd years later, here we are. But yeah, moving into the 20th century, they moved beyond, live animals at games. At that point, a really big thing. Chicago Cubs, the Boston Red Sox, others. They had bears, Pat. They had lions. Some of them even had elephants that they would bring along as a lucky charm. It obviously, in latter day, became more of a marketing tool, merchandise tool. But needless to say, after decades of that.
Do we have any information, Adrian, on how much money is made from mascots every year in the club stores?
It's monstrous. I haven't seen any numbers that specifically relate to that exact thing, but it is monstrous that we see modern day mascots serving a huge purpose for modern sports brands and well beyond that as well. Merchandise sales, they have huge social media followings now. They'll do viral challenges that you'll see pop up in your social media feeds. The pre-match entertainment on the pitch beforehand, we see plenty of that depending on the sport that you're at. And mascots can also go terribly wrong, Pat, as we've seen over the last few years. Searle the Swan was a real bad one. He was a Swansea mascot, had a few dust-ups. English football, Welsh football had to introduce a mascot code of conduct off the back of his activity. He was involved in a bit of a ruckus with Zampa the Lion from Millwall, where Cyril literally took his head off with an uppercut and had to leg it out of the stadium.
The mascot normally kind of reflects in some way on the club itself. For example, you've got the seagull in Brighton, it being the mascot there, because that's a coastal town. Where did Leo the Lion come from for Leinster? Is it all about Leo Cullen?
Gully the Seagull, in fact, is his name, our friend at Brighton. Leo the Lion, I think, just came from a bit of alliteration, as a lot of them do, to be honest. Listen, some of them do have... there was a time, and you'll remember this, Pat, where Leinster were referred to as the Lions, and that no doubt had a big part in that.
Well, at one point, the Munster fans used to call them the Lady Boys of Leinster. Do you remember that day?
Yes, I do. Neil Francis, very famously coined phrase.
Now, Munster's mascot, I was looking this up and I was trying to figure out, is it Murty, who looks like a blow-up doll, or is it Oscar, who looks like a rodent?
Oscar the Stag, I think, is the famous Munster album. Oscar the Stag was as much as I could find out last night. Leo the Lion, as you've mentioned. Eddie the Eagle is our friend over at Connacht as well. So there's a good few of them. And actually, it's funny because when you scroll back in time, so the move from that sort of live animal bit to a human being in a costume, there's a brilliant story of how all that came about in San Diego. With the San Diego chicken was one of the first of its kind in relation to that. A guy called Ted Giannalis, who was employed by a radio station in San Diego. He was their station mascot. They would use him for promotions. And he would regularly go to San Diego Padres games in his costume. He'd give out prizes, but some trouble ensued between Ted and the brilliantly named KGB radio, Pat, which you'll appreciate at that time, something of a controversial enough name, perhaps. He was sacked, a court case followed, but Ted vowed to be true to his roots and would continue as a chicken. He won that case, and he was duly signed up by the Padre, who knew that they had a huge hit. He was a huge hit with the fans. They had a grand unveiling. It's actually, you can view it up on YouTube. A couple of highway patrol bikes, an unarmed truck, bringing him into the Padre Stadium with a giant egg on top. And he was hatched, and the San Diego, the notion of the San Diego chicken was hatched. But Ted was a huge deal, like Ronald Reagan appearances during the 88 election campaign. He did, however, suffer the ignominy of a very low point in 1991. Ted the Chicken successfully sued for $300,000. He tackled the Chicago Bulls cheerleader on the court, and he did some damage to her. He broke her jaw and he broke her elbow, and he was sued. And I think that was pretty much the downfall of poor old Ted.
Now, when you're mentioning chickens, do you remember the French, when they came to Ireland for the rugby internationals, used to always bring, I suppose, Le Coq Sportif with them, you know, the little cockerel that would run up and down the touchline before them. And I don't know how they managed to smuggle the bird in.
Yeah, well, it was a real feature, wasn't it? I mean, it was an official feature. I remember being at games. You're absolutely right. The French cockerel was there. It was a big thing, like emerging from those days, like I mentioned, the turn of the century into 70s, 80s, 90s. No self-respecting sports brand couldn't be without a chicken or a mouse or a lion or some other unsuspecting animal of their choice. But absolutely, the French cockerel. I remember being at a rugby match in New Zealand in the 2000s, the Canterbury Crusaders had a big horse show before their match with several horses out on the pitch. And you think, certainly when I set up this item, well, this is the thing of the past, but no, very much in the college sports circuit in the US particularly, it remains the case that there are a lot of live animals in play.
All right, Adrian, thank you very much for joining us. Adrian Barry from Off the Ball, and that's all we've time for.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.